This Galactic Netcast is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can listen to over 20,000 radio shows and podcasts on your smartphone, your tablet, or your PC anytime, anywhere, and it's streamed directly to your device with no downloading or syncing. Although, you can download stuff to your device if you're going to be in an area with no cell service or Wi-Fi. Cue the tumbleweeds. Anyways, you can sign up now and get the free app by going to Stitcher.com and using the promo code GALACTICNETCASTS and tell them Brad sent you. Actually, there's probably no place for you to tell them that Brad sent you, but whatever. You're gonna enjoy Stitcher, I promise.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
Hello, it is Wednesday, April 9th, 2014. Welcome to yet another Galactic Netcast thingy. This is the Alien Invasion number 101 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me is Brad Ludwig, and Anessa is off this week. What's her story, Brad? What's going on with her?
Well, she's gearing up to move to Wisconsin with me, and she's looking to spend some time with family before she heads out in a month. So
that makes sense. I feel her pain. Well, there's no real pain involved. Physical, at least. Maybe some emotional pain.
Some emotional, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving, basically 20 hours north, 28 hours from her parents approximately. That's a big deal. So yeah. She's trying to get in some time before she physically moves. So
all right. Well, we'll miss her this time around, but she'll be back sooner.
And she will be in, I believe she's going to be joining us for our other podcast for Sci-Fi Geeks School.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she didn't say anything about, did you just say Sci-Fi Geeks School?
I tied in Sci-Fi Film School with Sci-Fi Geeks Club and made a whole new podcast.
We should totally do that. You know, teach people how to be a sci-fi geek. That would be awesome. You know, you get somebody that's not a geek and then we can like school them during the show. That would be awesome.
Maybe. And, you know, Matt's gotten better, but it's taken how many years? That's a lot of time invested.
Yeah, it has been years, so maybe it's not a good idea. Okay. All right. So welcome to the show where we talk about aliens from other places in our universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and real life. It is the Alien Invasion, and the show is divided in three sections. The news, the creature feature, that is the spotlight of a certain kind, a particular kind of alien, and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us do the show live, we have been doing it Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time, but just follow us on our social networks to find out exactly when and where the Hangout's going to be for the recording of the podcast by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. All the info at galacticnetcasts.com. So, Brad, you ready?
I believe I am.
I believe I can fly. Okay, here we go.
In the news.
Yeah, that was dumb. I'm sorry.
Why was that dumb?
I believe I can fly.
There's no shame in that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, a little breaking into a little bit of the R. Kelly. I mean,
Yeah, I know. And R. Kelly, can't go wrong with him.
Usually not.
No. So what do you got for our first story this week?
Well, the first story, it sounds like pure crap, but this is actually a real thing. NASA cameras have actually captured what appears to be artificial lights shining on the surface of Mars. Now, the photo was taken last week by one of the two rovers that are on Mars. And beam the images back to the Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena. They haven't released an official statement about this light, and I'm going to show you. If you're watching the video portion of the show here, I'm going to pull up the image that's in question here. Now, UFO bloggers have seen this image because it's been released to the general public. UFO bloggers are really excited about it because it looks like a beam of light is shining and has hit the camera lens directly. So there is a consistent flash or beam of light that can be seen in this image that we're about to see here.
So there's some aliens. So there's some aliens on the planet Mars with their little.
What people are thinking.
With their little laser, you know, they're like a bunch of teenagers with their
laser pointer.
Laser pointer, yeah, just messing with people.
Okay. So Scott Waring from UFO Sightings Daily, from his blog, said this could indicate that there is intelligent life below the ground and uses light as we do. And he described the light as flat on the bottom and shining upward as if from the ground. So it's kind of coming from the ground up and shining into the camp because there's a little bit of a flare. So it hit the lens of the rover's camera. The rover in question here is the Curiosity. And they drove it about 98 feet last Wednesday because they needed to arrive at a new area called the Kimberley, which I believe is named for it's named for a region in Australia. Now, this spot that they chose, they're going to study different geological clues about ancient environments. It's kind of like there's different zones here of different rock types, and that's why they're in this area. And they just want to, you know, view some of the different rock outcroppings to see, you know, they found that the certain area that they were at before was an ancient lake bed, and now they're just trying to see what else is around this area. So they've only driven the Curiosity, and this is interesting, 3.8 miles since August 12th when it arrived at Gale Crater. Now, when you think about that, 3.8 miles doesn't seem like a lot, but they've been driving it around and studying for quite a bit and taking pictures and, you know, taking samples and checking things out.
And it's not like it's a hot rod. You know, it doesn't have an internal combustion engine. You know, it's not made for speed, really. It's made for durability and longevity.
Longevity?
Yeah.
There you go. Let's see. Samples collected from the previous stop at Yellowknife Bay is where they found the ancient lake bed. I like the names of these areas. Yellowknife Bay, the Kimberley, Gale Crater. And at Yellowknife Bay is where they found that there was an environment, based on their studies, that had the chemical ingredients and energy that would be needed for life. They didn't find life, but they found the components that could contribute to life appearing on Mars. Okay. So, very interesting. And now that I've been talking this up quite a bit, I'm going to pull up the image here for folks who are checking us out on video. Let me zoom in a little bit here.
And why don't you narrate a little bit too for the audio folks?
There we go. So, in the kind of on the horizon of the image, there's kind of a hazy mountainous background in this photo. But on the horizon of Mars, of this image, on the kind of the edge of the left third of the image, right at the junction of the horizon and the beginning of the haze of the mountainous background, is a kind of a perpendicular lens flare, it looks like. And that's what all the hubbub is this steady beam of light, as they're calling it, shown at Curiosity. Now, this is pretty far away, so I don't think that they could just drive over there and take a look and see what it is. You know, it's so dusty there. I would doubt that it's a smooth rock. So, I mean, they're really perplexed by what this is.
You know, aside from the actual light itself, that's a beautiful picture.
Oh, yeah, it is. It really is.
I mean, those mountains look like they could be mountains on Earth.
Yeah. Yep.
So
absolutely.
I have a theory as to what's going on here, Brad.
All right.
Okay, you know that they've started filming Star Wars, right? Episode 7?
Yeah.
I think J.J. Abrams brought the whole damn film crew to Mars, because you mentioned lens flare, right?
Yes.
He's famous for lens flare, so he actually brought the crew to Mars, and they accidentally got a light shining on the rover. That's my explanation.
Or this could be Joss Whedon's way of announcing that Firefly is getting back together.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of lens flaring in Firefly as well.
Yeah, I think we both could be onto something. I saw a story today that on io9.com that pretty much refuted everything. That they pretty much said that this is just a natural phenomenon. It was just natural light that that got caught on camera that looks like something man-made. Or something on purpose.
And it's so far away, it can't be a piece of the spacecraft. It has to be of Mars. You know, there's something natural to Mars that's happening there for sure.
But it would be cool if it was something, you know, extraterrestrial, alien involved somehow. That'd be neat.
Yeah, it really would be. And it's going to be interesting, too, to see, you know, as more of this develops, as they study more areas, as they study the Kimberley, to find out more of what Mars was like. And I think this was really money very well spent.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
For this mission, absolutely, 100%.
And isn't that rover propelled? Isn't the engine a nuclear engine?
I don't think so. I believe it's got large solar panels. It is powered by the sun. They just went through, I think it, what was the one that showed up before Curiosity? Was that Opportunity?
There's Opportunity and Spirit were the ones that were on Mars, on the surface, for years before Curiosity got there.
Okay.
I know that they were solar, but I want to say that Curiosity is nuclear. There's a place for this information.
Yep, I'm on it.
It's called the Internet.
Calling the Internet. No, you are absolutely 100% correct. It is a radioisotope thermoelectric generator.
Whew. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, it has. I got them confused. It has no solar panels. This is purely nuclear powered.
So that thing has the possibility, has the potential of running for a long time, right?
You know, basically running until parts wear out and it can't move anymore, or something happens with the wheels.
It's just spinning
or
its
something.
Wheels. It's just sitting there spinning its wheels. How sad is that?
That would be very sad.
I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Great story, Brad. We'll keep you up to date on the latest on this as it develops. Now back to you, Wolf. Okay, so since Anessa's not here, you're going to read her story, right?
Yes. And I'm not going to give it away because it's too good. This story is from Arkansas, and let's see if you can guess who wrote this story, and by who I mean what organization. Arkansas. Once again, hundreds of dead blackbirds are falling from the Arkansas sky 2 years in a row.
Weekly World News.
Yes, you're okay. Absolutely.
Yay! I win.
Correct.
I win.
The town of God, I want to say Beebe, Arkansas, has seen this before, and citizens are wondering why this is happening to them again. And it's not just them this time. Blackbirds are dropping all across Arkansas. Arkansas authorities contacted the federal agencies, who once again turned the matter over to the UN panel on extraterrestrials. Yesterday, Dr. Susan Begley, one of the heads of the UN panel of extraterrestrials, they like to just keep throwing that in there, the UN panel of extraterrestrials.
It gives some legitimacy, you know?
Absolutely, some gravitas, as it were, flew to Little Rock to meet the Arkansas officials and to examine the birds. opening salvo from Begley, as she says, it's definitely the work of the Gutens.
Okay, hang on. Hey, I should have been ready for this. Hang on. Say that line again.
It's definitely the work of the Gutens. There we go.
They're back. I'm so happy that we have a Guten story again. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Bagley goes on to say, we'd like to think that this is just something they're doing for some ritualistic reason. But the truth is, we think it is once again signaling citizens of Earth that there will be a full-on ground attack sometime this year. The UN confirmed that three gigantic spaceships landed on Earth on November 27th, 2011. Two landed in a remote southern area of China. We talked about this before.
Yeah.
And one landed in the Indonesian Sea. Since that time, the UN has estimated that over 10,000 aliens from planet Guten have spread out across the planet, though the number could be much higher. What do the Gutens plan to do here on Earth? That's a good question.
No, we want to know. Definitely. Do you have an answer for us?
Bagley goes on to say, we are not sure. That's very reassuring. But the Gutens have a history of being hostile, obviously because they're killing blackbirds for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
They also do not attack in conventional ways that citizens of Earth are used to. We won't see them coming, she said.
Of course.
These dead blackbirds are very troubling.
Yeah, they're using birds. So that's very unconventional, I'd say.
Now, if they were flinging the birds at citizens of Earth, that would be a little bit different, I think.
Yeah.
Animal care and control in this state of Arkansas were overwhelmed. We couldn't keep up with the calls. It was total blackbird devastation out there, Lloyd Marband of Little Rock Police told WWN. I'd say there are over 15,000 dead blackbirds across Arkansas. Not a good way to start the year.
No, not at all. What was that movie that came out, I want to say within the last couple of years, that there was a part in it where birds kept on hitting the window of the house? It was sort of alien abduction.
Is it The Fourth Kind?
No, it wasn't The Fourth Kind. Dark Skies? Not Dark Skies. Something Skies. Oh. I want to say.
Shoot.
But that was a scene, and I believe they were blackbirds. Kept hitting the windows. There was one, then there was two, and then they just kept on coming.
No, I think you're right. It was Dark Skies.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see the image of the scene where the birds are hitting the window and the little girl standing next to it.
Yeah.
Is that the scene? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's get back to the story. Let's see. Ronnie Taylor, a citizen of Hope, Arkansas, said, there are just birds falling down everywhere on the street and people dodging and missing them. My boy Ted was out there trying to pick them up and got hit by five dead ones. It was scary. The UN panel of extraterrestrials is examining the birds. The Arkansas Game and Fish Department took about... 300, God, now the number here is all goofed up. We're going to say 300 birds for testing to try to determine what happened. The UN panel took over 1,000 birds back to the alien research facilities in Quantico, Virginia.
You know, the Gutens have been around as long as this show has, as long as the Alien Invasion podcast has. It's 2011. We started in the fall of 2011.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
3 years.
I know.
Almost. Weird. Almost 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that the Guten invasion lasts as long as this show does. Because you can always rely on the Gutens for something special.
We continue to keep this going for quite some time.
Yeah.
So an extended war and or occupation by the Gutens would not be desired.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
So there you go. Guten Report.
I wish we had one every week. That would be awesome. Because it could be its own feature, its own like segment of the show.
It really could.
Yeah. All right.
Is that we have to have like Guten or Z-Ban.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that a Z-Ban story will be coming before you know it. It's got to be.
Got to be.
Because when there's one, there's another. Or there's the other.
Usually.
Yeah.
We'll keep our eye on the weekly world news and see what comes up.
All right. Is that it? Is that all we got for
this?
That's
all I got on that.
All right. And finally in the news this week, okay, we love our zombie stories, right? Our zombie movies, our zombie TV shows, right?
We do.
Okay. We love our alien stories, movies, TV shows, books, right?
We do.
So why don't we combine the two?
That's too much awesome. My brain would explode.
I know, but it's been combined. Astronomers publish study on extraterrestrial zombies.
Is this a Weekly World News story?
No, this is legit. This is totally legit. While some scientists use their time researching things like extraterrestrial life, two astronomers have performed a genuine public service for Earth by calculating the likely number of nearby planets inhabited by the undead. I couldn't pass this up. I had to have this on the show this week.
This is great.
Yeah, there's no way we couldn't talk about this.
No.
The story, written by Stephen Kane, who divides his time between San Francisco State University and the Center for Global Extinction Pandemic Control. Wow, that's kind of a cool job. So his job is actually determining whether there's going to be a zombie outbreak or something like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. his colleague, Frank Zell-Ziz, Planetary Defense Institute, presents a modified Drake equation. Of course, I'm sure we've discussed the Drake equation before, and it's pretty well known. It's just a way of figuring out how many intelligent how much intelligent life is in the universe, basically, or in the galaxy, which reveals that there could be more than 2,500 zombie-infested planets within 100 parsecs, 326 light years of our solar system. We're in deep, deep trouble. The premise underlying this calculation is completely simple. A growing number of Earth-sized exoplanets have been discovered, many of which might be orbiting within the habitable zone of their host stars. This, in turn, increases the likelihood that life is relatively common in the universe. That's the Drake equation right there. But evolution on Earth, or evolution of life on Earth, has been accompanied by symbiotic relationships between animal species and the bacteria and viruses that use the animals as hosts. The result has been a long history of lethal pandemics, including cholera, influenza, smallpox, and, of course, spontaneous necroanimation psychosis, otherwise known as SNAP. That's more commonly known as zombieism. I like the snaps. Good touch. As it stands to reason that this could be a cosmic-wide phenomenon, not just here on Earth. So, according to the researchers, the projected frequency of SNAP planets explains, a contradiction which has long troubled the proposition that intelligent life is common, the Fermi paradox. This premise of the paradox is that the timescale for extraterrestrial civilizations to spread throughout the galaxy is small compared with stellar lifetimes, and so we should have encountered our neighbors by now, right? Our work here shows the resolution of the paradox to be quite simple. The desolation of a civilization requires only that they encounter a case of SNAP during their exploration phase of their entire civilization will collapse. Wait a second. Let me reread that. A case of SNAP during their exploration phase. Oh, and their entire civilization will collapse. Okay, so they're out there exploring the solar system or the galaxy, and something happens, and they all turn into zombies. Is that what they're saying?
Yep.
Okay. Let us, and they conclude with this phrase, let us not repeat history by rushing into where our predecessors ought to have feared to tread.
Like bringing zombies to their planet.
Hasn't there been some movies, particularly in the 1950s and 60s, that involved zombie-like aliens?
I can do you one better. From the 80s, it had Patrick Stewart, called Life Force.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And their ship was tied in with Halley's Comet, and when it came around, the vampire slash zombie epidemic hit the Earth.
That's right. So something from space caused it on the planet to happen. And wasn't Plan 9 from outer space, wasn't that like reviving the dead, the already dead?
I believe so.
Okay. So this is not, a precedent has been set. This is an actual real thing, according to the cinema.
According to Hollywood, yes.
Yeah. I just love it that these guys are sitting around going, you know, we could be actually legitimately searching for extraterrestrial life, going through all this data from our countless, you know, arrays throughout the world. But nah, let's figure out how many zombie planets are in the galaxy.
Because that's incredibly useful, because we've not really, you know, with the exception of, like, you know, we've seen stories of, like, fungi that invade an insect host and then take over its functionality so that it, actually, I think there's a couple of viruses that do that, too.
Yeah.
That, you know, to kind of keep the species of fungi or that particular virus alive, they have to, like in the case of like some of the ants, the fungi slowly overtakes them and, you know, makes them climb up like a long piece of grass or something that gets them up in the air higher. And then they completely take over the host. The host dies, but then the spore continues to grow until it can explode and then spread its, you know, spores to other creatures and repeat the procedure.
Yep. So this is a real thing. I mean, zombieism is a real thing. Not quite to the human level, not to our level, but it happens in nature. So, you know, it's possible. It's a possibility. You know, I recently watched a show that kind of tackles the possibility of a zombie apocalypse happening, a zombie outbreak, and they think that the most likely cause would be something like rabies. It's not exactly, you know, the dead returning to life or, you know, people dying and then becoming zombies. It's more of going completely apeshit, you know?
Yeah. And rabies causes hydrophobia, which is one of the things that kills the host, as I recall.
Yeah.
They stop drinking water.
Yeah. So that's the closest, I think, that we can get to zombieism is the rabies thing.
Sure.
All right. That is the news. If you want to leave us feedback on any of the stories that we talked about tonight, we'd love it. Call our voicemail number. It is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966, or email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Let's continue now with the program, and we continue it with... Hang on, I'm trying to stretch here.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
And I like your pick for the week, Brad. I like your Creature Feature. Of course, this is the famous alien in history. Aliens, either in the media, in entertainment, or in real life. You know, the ones that people claim to be abducted by. You chose to go the more fantastical route this week, and I like that you picked a alien from this particular universe, because the Marvel Universe had a great week.
Yeah. At this point in time, Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, has come out. Now, the reason why I picked the Kree, which is our creature feature, it was confirmed by... Chloe Bennett, the actress who plays the character Skye in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and this is a spoiler, so if you haven't been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then you need to stop listening for a couple minutes here. I think we might have talked about this before too, and given a spoiler alert, the serum that they used to bring back Coulson from the dead and was also recently used to heal Skye from her very, very critical injuries that she received, is derived from the blood of a blue-skinned alien, which she confirmed is a Kree. So the Kree have officially shown up in the Marvel cinematic universe of which Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a part of.
Are you all, now, Brad, are you all caught up? Did you watch The Winter Soldier and did you watch the latest Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, actually, Anessa and I are going to be watching the episode Turn, 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 which was the episode that aired last night, which directly ties into Captain America 2, Winter Soldier. So haven't seen it quite yet.
So my lips are sealed. I will not reveal a single thing about what happened.
Based on what happened in the movie, I've got a good feeling of some bits that are going to come to light in this particular episode, but I digress. So the Kree are also known as the Rule. I'll get to that a little bit later. They are scientifically and technologically advanced militaristic alien race in the fictional Marvel Universe. They are native to the planet Hala. Sorry.
That's awesome.
It's H-A-L-A.
No, nice.
In the large Magellanic Cloud. Whew. Had to take a couple of runs at that. Their first on-panel appearance was Fantastic Four number 65, and that was August of 1967. And the Kree were created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Now, the true Kree resembled humans almost exactly with the exception of blue skin, hence the appearance of the blue-skinned alien and confirming that that is a Kree alien. The Kree have a higher strength level than that of the human race and require more nitrogen to breathe comfortably. Kree bodies are adapted to environmental characteristics on Hala that are unearth-like. They have a higher gravity and a higher concentration of nitrogen in the atmosphere. Under Earth's lesser gravity, their strength and speed increase. However, they cannot breathe the Earth's atmosphere without using a chemical breathing formula or artificial life support devices. The original Kree had blue skin coloring, but there was a second racial group of pink-skinned Kree that resemble more closely human Caucasians, and they emerged over the last millennia. Presently, the dark-skinned purebred Kree are a small but powerful minority. The pink Kree are much more durable than their blue-skinned racial brethren. Adult Kree range typically from 5 to 8 feet tall. Some female Kree can physically influence men, and there are a few that can even drain the life force of others. The Kree are a nationalistic, imperialistic, and militaristic society.
There's a lot going on there, Brad.
with the only widespread religion being worship of the Supreme Intelligence. The Supreme Intelligence is basically an amalgam of the greatest Kree minds that have died, but they've assembled their intelligence into a kind of an organic computer, which also rules or has ruled Kree, the Kree at one point in time. I'll get to that in a second.
Not to be confused with the intelligence from Doctor Who.
Completely different.
Okay.
The Kree Empire. Oh, I'm sorry. They're a small minority. Practice a pacifist Kadatai religion, but this is forbidden. There are some members of a church called the Universal Church of Truth as well. The Kree Empire extended through nearly 1,000 worlds in the northwestern lobe, basically from Earth. If we were to look at the Magellanic Cloud, the northwestern lobe of that, and they have outposts in other galaxies. Kree names are usually short, being one or two syllables. given names are separated from surnames by a hyphen. So we have Marvel, Yanrog, Unarog, Zayrog as some examples.
My name's going to be Cartel. Cartel.
Some Kree have been given comic book references as names, such as Marvel for Marvel Comics, Atlas from Atlas Comics, which is a older company that no longer exists, DC for DC Comics,
wow.
And Starlin. A tip of the hat to Jim Starlin, who did a lot of work with the Captain Marvel comic book, and Captain Marvel was Captain Mar-Vell, whom we described just a little bit ago. So, under the Supreme Intelligence, the Kree Empire, like we said, is a militaristic technocratic dictatorship. Under a certain Kree by the name of Clumsy Foulup, I don't know what happened at that point.
What they the came hell? Up with,
I don't know. Whoever was writing at that point in time probably needed to have their hands broken.
Yeah, I'd say.
The Kree were temporarily a monarchy, while under Ael Dan and Dar Ben, they were back to a military dictatorship. Leaders of the Kree have included Supreme Intelligence, who I just described earlier, Ronan the Accuser, who we will see in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sweet. Wow, I didn't realize that there was a tie-in there. Okay.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And most recently, Black Bolt of the Inhumans. Now, I have a feeling that probably about Phase 4 or Phase 5 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we're going to see the Inhumans. And the Inhumans are basically genetically enhanced humans.
Okay.
They lived... on Earth, but they eventually, through shenanigans on Earth, they actually had the powers to actually physically pick up that section of the Earth that they were living on and plant it on the moon.
Wow. That's some great powers. I want those powers.
Their Kree began their empire over a million years ago, within 100 years of the acquisition of interstellar technology from the Skrulls. Now, the Skrulls were a previous... alien the creature feature that I picked before. The Skrulls were a benevolent people until they met the Kree, and the Skrulls wanted to build their own galactic empire based on free trade, and they were, like I said, a peaceful race. And then they landed on Hala, and the and the Kree kind of wrecked that for them, and they eventually became kind of... brutal. They became a brutal race after they started their war with the Kree.
So the Kree are a bad influence on other races.
Yeah, they really are. They absolutely are. Captain Marvel was sort of an exception to the rule, but he was on Earth, and he eventually kind of understood Earth a little bit better and changed and became a hero, a superhero on Earth. Although Hala is the official planet of Kree's origin, for a time, the planet Kree-Lar in the Terrenal system served as the capital of the Kree Empire as well as the seat of the government. The permanent ruler was the organic computer construct called Supremor, or the Supreme Intelligence. Like I said, the preserved brains of the greatest intellect of the Kree race linked together. Sort of like a techno-organic computer. Aiding the Supreme Intelligence were a number of imperial administrators on Kree-Lar, who were also governors of each of the member worlds, and a vast standing space militia. Whew. There was a lot that I put in there, but a lot of that is kind of relevant to what's happening in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., also Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think we're going to be seeing more of them in the future.
I am so excited that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is now full-on Marvel Universe, dealing with people from other planets, powers, all that cool stuff about the Marvel Universe. I'm so glad that they're in it deep now.
Yeah. You know, based on the reports that we've been seeing, they basically had to kind of soft shoe and kind of hold, you know, kind of take some time, and they had to wait until Captain America came out before they could kind of release it, pull all the stops out on it.
Yeah.
It's the pivotal thing that really launches S.H.I.E.L.D. to where they wanted it to be. So it's going to be interesting. For people that haven't been watching it, you should really go back and watch the episodes.
It's like, you know, it's like any great sci-fi show, and there's been some crappy episodes. Like, people forget how crappy the first couple of seasons, or the first season and a half of Star Trek The Next Generation was.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Almost unwatchable. If you were to go back now and watch those episodes after you've seen, you know, subsequent seasons afterwards, you scratch your head and wonder, how the heck did this thing even survive to go on as long as it did?
Yeah, thank God it was in syndication, because if it was a network show, it would have been canceled very, very quickly.
Yeah, the pilot, the encounter on Farpoint was just wretched.
Yeah.
Wretched.
So I want to go back real quick and talk about the... You said that some of the members of the Kree are members of the Universal Church of Truth?
Yes.
Isn't that the place that you go on the internet to get a married, get your license to conduct a marriage ceremony?
You know, that's a good question. You know what? Many years ago, I actually, I applied online and I got my certificate. Okay. I could technically marry people with that certificate. That's a good question.
To
the internet.
You can hop in a plane and come up here next week and marry Stephanie and I. How's that sound?
No, actually.
It's close though, right? It's a name that's similar. There's Universal Church something.
There is actually. Thank you, Google. There is actually a church in Indianapolis, Indiana, that is the Universal Church of Truth.
That's so awesome. I wonder what came first, the comic book Universal Church of Truth or the actual Church of Universal Truth?
If only I could find more information about this here.
You can basically make a church out of anything, you know? Just let's. They could, for all we know, they might be, you know, they might be, their religion might be based on something Kree-related. Who knows? That'd be cool.
Let's see. Oh, I'm close. They've got a Google Plus page.
Go, Brad, go. Go, Brad, go. Go, Brad, go. Go, go.
Come on. Come on. They don't seem to have an actual website, or if they do, the SEO is so low on it.
Yeah.
I found a video that is their choir.
Okay.
Singing God Is.
Okay. All right.
I could devote more time to this, but it's going to drag on. There is an actual honest-to-God Universal Church of Truth in Indianapolis, Indiana, if you are so inclined.
All right. So we'll have a link to the Kree in the show notes of the podcast if you want to learn more about the Kree. If you can't get enough of the Kree, you can learn more from the link that we'll provide.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to our picks. I know that in the order on the document, it's Brad first, but you've been doing a lot of talking, so I will do mine first, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's fine.
All right, and I believe it was early on in this podcast that somebody brought up Ancient Aliens as a pick, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my lovely fiance just happened to have a great episode of Ancient Aliens saved for me to watch this week on her DVR, and it's the Season 6, Episode 9, Ancient Aliens, called Aliens and Forbidden Islands. This is a really, really good one. I thought it was, they did a good job. And, of course, the crazy hair guy showed up. I forget his name. So here's a brief synopsis of this episode of Ancient Aliens, Aliens and Forbidden Islands. Legends of lost and mysterious islands, advanced civilizations, and Eden-like paradises have been told by sailors throughout human history. Is it possible these stories are more than just the myths of imaginative seafarers? Might evidence of our ancient alien origins be found by exploring the world's most remote islands, strategic spots where extraterrestrials may have once made their earthly homes and possibly still visit today? Unidentified submersible objects going at lightning speeds, strange crafts coming out of the water near remote volcanic islands, and mystifying megalithic ruins in the middle of the ocean? Is it possible the UFO activity could be hidden deep underwater and off the coast of islands? Could this explain why so many islands around the world have stories of unexplained sightings of objects both unheard and beneath the sea going back centuries? So that's the official synopsis of this episode, and it was rather interesting because they brought up some cool stuff that I had no idea about. Like, have you heard of the Isle of Man?
I have heard of it, yes.
So the Isle of Man is off the coast of England, right? It's off the coast of England between England and Ireland, I believe. I think.
My geography of that area is just freaking atrocious.
While you're looking that up, I'll explain this a little bit more. So one of the legends on the Isle of Man are of these tiny creatures. And one of the possibilities that was brought up was that these tiny creatures are actually the gray aliens. And because there's not a lot of detail given, it's just like legends passed on from generation to generation, that there's been sightings of these little creatures. And these little creatures, other stories that they were interbreeding with humans on the Isle of Man. Did you find it?
Yeah, it's tucked in. It's just a little bit, it's like a little bit north and west of Liverpool, but it's in between the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland.
Okay, all right, cool.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Now back to the story.
There you go.
So that's one of the stories they brought up on this episode of Ancient Aliens. Another one was another island that was further west of Ireland, actually off the Ireland coast, 200 miles, an island called High Brazil. I've never heard of this island. It's a mythical island shrouded in mystery off the coast of Ireland in the Atlantic Ocean. It was said to be shrouded in mist, making it invisible to passing sailors. The mist lifts for only one day every 7 years. In some renditions of the legend, the island is the home of gods of Irish lore. In other retellings, High Brazil is inhabited not by gods, but rather by priests or monks. And, of course, possibly aliens as well. There's another story they told was of a UFO report, a UFO actually circling a U.S. Navy ship for several minutes in 1944 off the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. And another story is Sandy Island, located in the South Pacific, which appeared on maps for hundreds of years, a couple of centuries. And just recently, some scientists went out to where it was supposed to be, and it was gone.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And even on Google Maps or, you know, satellite views from orbit, it was gone as well.
Hmm.
So one of the premises they brought up was, you know, the possibility that aliens have had in the past and still do have, you know, bases in these remote locations around the world because there's not a whole lot of people out there. You know, you could easily hide some kind of UFO or alien base under the water, you know, around these volcanic islands.
But, you know, the one thing about volcanic islands or anything that's produced by a volcano, once a volcano no longer is ejecting lava, it eventually will sink down into the ocean through either, you know, erosion, or there's no pressure, there's no magma lifting it up. And once it, you know, that stops running, essentially like a faucet,
mm-hmm.
It will actually start sinking down back into the water. Like the atolls are like that. Like coral has built up around it, and that's all that's left. And the interior, which was which was basically a volcano, sinks back down into the water, and it creates a water area. You know, there's some like a ring of like coral. Well, that's what, like white sand. A lot of that is just ground up coral that has just risen up over time in the water. So you get things like that. But volcanic islands, once they stop spewing magma, do eventually settle down, or can eventually settle down into the ocean.
Yeah, so. and it would be shallower water, and yep. That would be a lot easier to navigate through if you had like some kind of craft that could both, you know, fly in the air, fly in space, and underwater. It'd be easy to navigate if it was, you know, shallower.
Sure.
And something else they brought up too was a report. I want to say back in the 40s, early 50s, I think, of U.S. found or saw on their sonar this crazy fast ship in, I think, around Cuba back in the, you know, 50s or 60s or late 40s.
Huh.
I don't have all the details, but it was way too fast of anything that was around in that time.
Sure.
So they think that that was possibly, you know, some kind of alien craft under the surface of the ocean.
Sure.
So that's what this episode was all about. And if you get a chance to check it out, again, it's Ancient Aliens, Aliens and Forbidden Islands. It aired on November 29th, 2013, and that is my pick for the week.
Very nice.
And what do you got for us, Brad?
So, Anessa and I, she kind of coaxed me into it, but the concept of this movie kind of intrigued me once I heard it. You know, just seeing some of the stills and some of it, it didn't seem interesting. The movie, which is on Netflix currently, is called The History of Future Folk.
Oh, you guys mentioned this. You guys had mentioned this before.
Yeah, from last episode. And I'm going to give you the IMDb rundown of this just so you kind of get a taste of what it is. The possibly exaggerated origin story of the real-life alien bluegrass band Future Folk that have been playing for New York City audiences for the better part of a decade. So, there is an actual band, a two-man band, that has been playing in New York City. They are called Future Folk, but they have sort of a gimmick. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share the screen, and hopefully, for those of you that are actually watching the video portion of the show, and if you don't, I highly recommend that you check us out on our YouTube channel. Their outfits, basically they've got a mop bucket that they've cut to have a visor, you know, an open space for them to be able to sing through.
Okay.
You know, so you can see their faces, but they wear, you know, red and black uniforms. Their boots are red and black. that is their actual getup. Now, it was decided that they would do a movie. And these are the two actual performers of Future Folk. The premise is there is a planet called Hondo. And Hondo has a comet that is coming, an asteroid that is coming towards it. And it will destroy Hondo. Now, the Hondoans sent out their best general, General Treus, to actually... they discovered planet Earth, and the plan was have General Treus go to Earth, release a viral agent that would kill everybody on Earth, and then with just a slight cooling off period, but plenty of time, they could get off of Hondo and colonize the Earth, take it over. And then Hondo would be destroyed, but their race would be able to go on a planet that's already been, you know, there's already buildings there. There's already resources there. They could just kind of pick up where the human race that they've just wiped out, pick up where they left off. And the one thing that General Treus finds out when he gets to Earth is that Earth has something that is unique to any other planet that he has been to.
Can I answer the question?
Yeah.
Folk music.
It is music. You are correct. Now, the interesting thing about this race is he gets so intrigued by music, and their race is very intelligent. He essentially like picks up instruments and just figures them out, and he can play them. They're a very super intelligent race.
Wow.
And I gotta tell you, I don't know how to pronounce his actual last name. I'm going to say his name is Nils Deolaire, and I'm probably butchering that. His main instrument that he uses is a banjo, and you're probably saying, banjo. He, in the process of trying to win over another Hondoan that comes to Earth to pick up where the general left off, to kind of see progress, nobody's had contact with him. He discovers music and he's like, you know, I can't kill off the human race. This is music is too amazing. It stops him cold in his tracks from doing what he's supposed to do. So, this other alien, Kevin is his name.
Why not?
He plays for Kevin a montage of Ode to Joy, the Super Mario Brothers theme, and a number of other different, you know, he goes from classical to pop culture based to contemporary to rap. You know, he just starts playing banjo-based versions of these songs, and he's just so freaking talented. It's mind-numbing.
So a cross-section of the music of the world.
Yes. And he, I mean, he, honest to God, he plays this, and it is just, it is brilliant. It's a very, very entertaining film. There's a lot more going on. You find out there's more to what he's doing, what he's trying to do. He loves Hondo, but he can't destroy the people of Earth, so how does he reconcile that, and what is his plan to fix this? The music, and Kevin, again, because he's from Hondo, ends up like learning the guitar in 26 hours and masters the guitar. And he is exceptionally talented. He ends up playing not flamenco style, but a very Latin style of music with the guitar that is just amazing. If you've seen Tenacious D, okay, It's not as outlandish as Tenacious D as Jack Black, but the talent that the two of that Jack Black and I can't remember
the
Kyle.
Okay.
Kyle has is equivalent. Just brilliant work. They create songs. They play some of their songs that they actually play for real. And they're just hilarious, well-written, well-executed songs. And if you're a fan of, oh my God, my brain just completely turned off. If you're a fan of
R. Kelly.
No, of Dee Snider, Twisted Sister. Dee Snider has a part in this movie.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And it's somewhat pivotal, and he's kind of an important character to these two, to the main characters of Future Folk. So a really good movie.
How is the
production? Highly recommend it.
How is the production quality?
Oh, it is. It's a high quality independent film.
Okay, so these guys are musicians that play regularly in New York City.
Yes. Yes.
They weren't They were not actors going into this, but did
Actually, Jay, who plays Kevin, is actually, he's been in a few movies and a few TV things. So he is also an actor, but he's a musician through and through, for
that
sure.
That's so awesome. I got to see this now. I'm putting it in my queue. Oh.
And they do have an album, actually at least one album, if not more. I was this close to buying it, but I have to wait until payday. So.
Okay. All right. Great recommendation. Thank you, Brad.
I can't recommend it enough.
Okay. We'll put the link to the Amazon.com item that you can purchase through our website, galacticnetcast.com, of this movie, or you can just go on Netflix and watch it, too.
Yes, you can check it out on Netflix. This was done in 2012, so it has been out for a couple of years, but well worth it. Well worth the watch.
All right. All the links to our recommendations, our pick, and the news will be in the show notes of this podcast, so check it out there. And that's going to do it pretty much. Unfinished business. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, or just go to our website, galacticnetcasts.com, and the links will be there to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, Google+, and Facebook for the latest news. And we do post science fiction and science news stories throughout the week for your information and entertainment. So we want to keep you on top of all that. So another great reason to follow us on our social networks. Again, email us, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. The voice number, our voicemail number, is 805-328-3966. I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Alien Invasion Podcast, number 101. Before we get out of here, final thought, Brad, what do you got?
What I've got is very visual.
And it says, Adventure Party. Are you going to tell us what this means? What does it mean?
Yeah. Adventure Party is a podcast that has been kind of running around in my head for a while. This is the final version of the logo that you're seeing if you're checking this out on YouTube. And basically, the only thing I'm waiting for now is my tax return so I can get like better podcast quality equipment to put together a good sounding program.
Do you want to explain what it is? What it's about?
Yeah, it's a podcast about gaming, role-playing mostly, but there will be board game stuff. It's really going to be about, at the end of the day, like role-playing games and stuff like that are about storytelling. So a lot of the topics that we're going to be talking about with my co-host, whom has not been on any of our podcasts before, somebody brand new.
Somebody brand new!
a brand new person being added to the fold. And he is an authority, and he's actually done some things in the role-playing game world. So that's all I'm going to say about that right now.
Sweet.
It's going to be talking about different aspects of role-playing games, of storytelling, and we're going to be talking about up-and-coming things that you should be watching for, as a lot of Kickstarter campaigns are being used for, you know, getting role-playing games out there, board games out there, and we're going to be watching and recommending things that people should be checking out. So
cool. I'm so excited for this. And this is going to be something that I'm not going to be on. That's going to be on the network. So this is something brand new. We're stepping it up to the next level, I think.
And the other thing, too, is my co-host does get to go to Toy Fair.
Ooh.
So we would be getting reports directly from Toy Fair. So
sweet. Oh, man. I'm so excited. Our future looks bright, Brad.
Yeah, I have a good feeling about this. I know I've been talking about it happening, but just waiting for the tax return right now, and we'll be good to go.
So stay tuned.
Yes.
And
also with Anessa moving in, I need better equipment so that the two of us can do a podcast together in the same house. So.
See? You need to justify. I think those are two great justifications for new equipment, really.
Absolutely.
All right, Brad, thank you very much. And that's going to do it. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Sounds good, Dave. Bye.
Bye. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.